Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to Basketball Conference, the ACC Football Podcast. My name is Joey Weaver. Mike McDaniel, still on paternity leave. He will be back very, very soon. Joining me tonight, a returning guest. You know him, you love him. If you need information about the Duke Blue Devils, there's only one place to go. That's where we go. Mr. Steve Wiseman, welcome back to the program. Steve, how are you doing?
Joey, I'm doing great. Thank you so much for the kind introduction. Not everybody loves me because you write about one team and the other and all that kind of stuff. So anyway, but that's good. It's good to be with you.
Well, hopefully it was a nice summer before you had to come back and start reading the comments section. Appreciate you joining us here.
It certainly was. Yeah, it certainly was a good summer after a long basketball season, a long, exciting basketball season. I know we're here to talk about football, but whenever you bring a guest on with Duke ties, basketball always seems to come up.
So. hard to ignore that. And I mean, a particularly pivotal year for Duke with, a long time sitting head coach and Coach K calling it quits after the year. That was, it was a big move. And I mean, kind of similar, and we're going to watch this transition, kind of similar to how a longtime sitting head coach for the football team called it quits after the year, as David Cutcliffe, after a long tenure, I believe it was 13 years, he was the head coach at Duke. He finally hangs it up at the end of the year. I don't know how much that was a voluntary thing versus maybe a little bit of a mutual thing, something like that. But certainly, I mean, a guy who, over his time at Duke, had to have been one of the most decorated, accomplished coaches in Duke history. And I know that things haven't really been great maybe the last couple of years as his career kind of came to an end. But certainly, I mean, a guy who had some of the greatest moments in Duke football history and someone I would imagine will live in Duke football lore for a long, long time.
Yeah, absolutely. And to start out there, you mentioned voluntary or mutual. Certainly not voluntary at all. Closer to mutual than anything. But, you know, I think everybody agreed for the most part that it was clearly time for some changes. You lose 17 out of 18 ACC games over the last 2 years, 13 in a row, most of them not competitive. A lot of 48-0 games and things like that. So the program had really, as great as Cutcliffe had, the heights that he'd raised it to, you know, earlier in last decade, they've completely lost all that momentum. They were back to kind of where at the bottom of the ACC where they were when he arrived. And, if you want, there were some improvements that needed to be made with infrastructure, with personnel that if you're going to get people that are going to write checks to support that booster wise, it's easier to do that when you have a new coach, a fresh face, some new ideas to try to completely jumpstart things from that point of view, I guess. And so, but as far as what Cutcliffe meant to Duke football, you can't overstate it. You can't overstate even despite how it ended, which I think is, it's a sad thing. Everybody, Cutcliffe is well loved throughout college football for all that he's accomplished in his coaching career before he came to Duke. And then since he came to Duke, you know, he took a program that was at the bottom of the country as far as football, Division One, and took them to 6 bowl games in 7 years once he got it going, ACC championship game appearance, all that kind of stuff, right? They finished in the top 25. After the 2013 year, they were ranked in the top 25 at the end of the year. So you talk about the history of Duke football, you know, Wallace Wade, right? His name's on the stadium for a reason, is the top of the line. And then in a different era, obviously, and then Steve Spurrier, his 3 years, you know, he shared an ACC championship in 1989 before he took off for Florida, his alma mater, of course, and had great success in a Hall of Fame coaching career there. So then he cut clips in that conversation, I think, because they were never a top five, top 10 team like they were under Wallace Wade, again, a different time for integration and all that kind of stuff. But the heights he took Duke to, people didn't think it was possible when he took the job. And even, you know, he had to doubt, you know, when he got here and saw what was going on. And they rebuilt the stadium. They built the indoor practice facility, all that kind of stuff that made, you know, Duke football, a Power Five level program. Now the task is, you know, more work like that needs to be done in facilities and all that. If you're not building every year, you're behind. You're the people you're recruiting against. So that's some of the stuff they need to do now. But But the program really, you know, frankly, had gotten stale. Sure. And it was time for some new vision in there. And that's why Mike Elko is now coaching Duke football.
And I think you're correct. I mean, that it had kind of fallen back to where it was when he picked it up several years back. I remember when he took over, and it was, I mean, any team in the ACC almost, if you had Duke on your schedule, I mean, it was a, you know, go ahead and just chalk that one up as a win before the season even started, you know. But again, as you said, six bowl games in 7 years is really an incredible feat at Duke, given where it came from. I mean, so certainly it peaked there in the middle of his tenure and had some really incredible years, but it was probably time to move on. Which brings us to the hiring of Mike Elko. And that was kind of an interesting one. And he's a guy that I know was really well revered. He was a really good defensive coordinator at Wake Forest. So he's got some experience in North Carolina. He had done really well at Notre Dame and Texas A&M. I mean, so he was a really hot shot, like up and coming kind of coach on the scene. When I first heard that Cutcliffe was expected to leave, it wasn't like Elko was the first guy that came to mind, but that's a process I would have to imagine that a lot of folks around the program are really happy with where they ended up with Mike Elko being the new head coach.
Absolutely. And of course, you know, he hasn't coached a game yet, so that'll be the ultimate litmus test, right? But, mm-hmm. but yes, at this point they're completely happy with what they have in him, with what he's done so far, with the type of person he is, which is but when the process started, it wasn't like they were like, okay, this is our guy, we're going to get him. I mean, it was a process. They went through a lot of names, talked to, you know, to seven or eight, and then brought some more in at the end. Tony Elliott from Clemson, who is now at Virginia, mm-hmm. was like, it was Elko and Tony Elliott. Jason Garrett famously got involved. He really wanted the job, the former, Cowboys coach. So he's somebody that's the kind of name Duke attracted, which is a little surprising, right? I mean, considering where the level of program where it is, but this was a job people saw that there was a possibility to do some stuff here, and Elko probably had opportunities to go bigger, better places, better football programs, right? If you really wanted to wait, given his background, he's never been a head coach before, but you mentioned the places he's worked, the people he's worked for, Dave Clawson, Brian Kelly, Jimbo Fisher, just right there. Those three, those are three really, really good, accomplished coaches.
It's a great set of mentors.
Absolutely. And, Mike played football at Penn in the Ivy League. So he's got an understanding of that type of academic structure that was very important to Duke to get a coach that understood this is what you get into and this is how you have to recruit here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not a challenge. It's like, okay, I can do this. I've done that before. I lived that life, right? So I can do that. I can talk to people that want to be that type of education and it's attractive to them, whereas just some players it wouldn't be, or they wouldn't have that possibility. So that's how that process went. And he hit the ground, hit the ground running in December, and had to completely redo the staff, and we'll talk about the people on the staff and everything. But a lot of the changes he made were within the football building. They had like three people dedicated to just recruiting. I'm talking non-coach positions, right? And now they have 10. So social media, all that modern stuff that Cutcliffe knew was important, but he's from a different generation, and you mm-hmm. can adjust a little bit, but you know, Elko's 45, and he's 20 years, 20 some years younger than Cutcliffe. And for all David has accomplished in the game, it's just a little different perspective that Mike Elko's bringing.
Right. Well, and yeah, and Cutcliffe, not only, you know, a bit of an older guy, but also, I mean, the last time he was anywhere other than Duke was like 2007, when this was not really a thing that most staffs had, you know, whereas Elko has seen it at Notre Dame and Texas A&M over the last 4 years. So he's got a real good idea of what those, you know, well built out kind of staffs look like. And I think that's typically what people refer to when they talk about infrastructure, is, you know, having that staff that's all built out. You mentioned the staff that he hired and his assistants, and I was looking at this and I was really impressed. Frankly, I look at a guy like, you know, his offensive coordinator Kevin Johns, as a longtime offensive coordinator at Indiana, Texas Tech, most recently at Memphis. He's got a defensive coordinator, Rob Smith, longtime DC from Rutgers, Arkansas, Minnesota, back to Rutgers most recently. And then he hires Jess Simpson, who's is interesting, like, you know, longtime high school head coach in Georgia, actually not very, really close to where I grew up, actually, in the same county. And then most recently, he's kind of bounced back and forth between the Falcons and Miami as an assistant. This seems like he really put a priority on guys who have a long track record and who have experience to help support him as he is a first-time head coach.
Yes, and there are people that, you know, for the most part, he crossed paths with him at one point or another in his career, which is common in the coaching world. Mm-hmm. But they also all came with, like, some different perspectives. It's not just all one mind, you know, this is my plan, and you guys all fit in with my plan and my scheme. And that's important when you're at this level and you're really starting a program, again, kind of from scratch, right? You're at the bottom of the league. You've got to build up. You've got to have different ideas. And like you mentioned, like Jeff Simpson, who's been in the NFL, he's been at Miami, right, high-level stuff. But he's a longtime high school coach in Georgia, which has been a prime recruiting area for Duke when they had some really good teams. They had yep. a lot of good players coming out of Georgia. And so that's the kind of things Mike saw. And he's built a pretty good staff. You know, Rob Smith, you know, again, a defensive coordinator in the SEC and the Big Ten, right? That's big time stuff there. You got to know what you're facing. You're facing a lot of high level plays there. And Kevin Johns brings some different stuff on the offensive side. So yeah, I mean, that's I've been to, you know, as we talk here, we're in the first week of practice. And so just three or four practices in, we're trying to get used to seeing what we're seeing, because it's all different from, mm-hmm. you know, I was on this beat for a long time and it was just one, you know, cut clip, right? Everything was the same. And now it's just totally different. I just know what you're looking at. So, but I know these guys, they're bringing a lot of energy and a lot of experience. Another guy, David Feely, is the strength and conditioning coach. They have a director of football performance or something like that, but it's basically strength and conditioning for football. And he previously was at the University of Miami for 3 years. So, again, high-level athletes, even though the Hurricanes haven't dominated the Coastal like everybody thought they would. But the fact is, he's brought, you know, a high level of work to this program, and he knows what it takes, you know, with that type of athlete to get things done. It's Elko and the other guys on the staff have raved about the work these guys have done in the weight room and conditioning, and which is kind of common for off-season stuff. But they really, you know, think that they're better athletes now than they were when they got here, and that's what they need.
Well, speaking of the players on the roster, and we'll get into some specifics here, but I guess overall, just like at the macro level, I look at this Duke roster coming off the Cutcliffe transition coming into this year, and I see a lot of spots that seem like they are fairly depleted. There is a bit of a blank slate for Mike Elko and his staff to work from here. Just in general, have you gotten the indication that they're thinking about going at this from like a youth movement standpoint, playing just a bunch of freshmen and sophomores and I guess building that up over time? Or have they, you know, do you feel like they've taken in a couple transfers? They've got a couple of lingering guys from the previous staff that they're trying to hopefully kind of float the boat here for a couple of years before getting their own guys in?
Yeah, they're definitely not going with youth movement. So I can put that to bed right now because they brought in seven transfers in the offseason, and I can tell you that the large majority of them are you know, on the depth chart now, working with either the first or second team or sometime in the third. So there are guys that that they think can make an immediate impact and get them. I mean, obviously their goal is to get back to a bowl game this year, right? That may be high in the sky, but you got guys that that can maybe help you get that done, like Detrone Young, the cornerback from Iowa. He played 4 years at Iowa State mm-hmm. in the Big 12. So, you know, he's used to playing at the Power 5 level. He's looking like he's got a chance to be a starting corner. In fact, I'll be surprised if he's not. But that's, I mean, they need to talk about depleted positions. The defensive secondary was depleted by losses. And frankly, the last 2 years, they've been terrible. Look at the numbers, giving up over 500 yards a game last year. They needed some. They don't want people back there. They want new people, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, but that's just one guy. Another guy they got, Darius Joyner, is a transfer from Western Illinois. He was an FCS All-American. He had like 140 some tackles last year at Western Illinois. But he's got a chance to come in and play. He knows how to make plays. So those are some things you want. They got some transfers in the offensive line that might be able to help out. And then you talk about guys left over. You know, the wide receivers, they have a lot of experience there. They have Jalen Calhoun and Jontavis Robertson, Darrell Harding. Those are guys that played the last couple of years that didn't put up huge numbers, great numbers, but they have college football experience. And then on your last point about the thing about the youth movement part, that's where you come back with like a quarterback,
mm-hmm.
where you have two sophomores battling for the job, Riley Leonard and Jordan Moore, who both saw playing time last year, but you know, neither one's been a starting quarterback for a whole season or any stretch of imagination like that. So that's where you look at it and go, okay, you might take some lumps there this year, but if you build them up and keep them in the program next year and the year after, you could have something special mm-hmm. as they get some playing time.
That makes sense. And have you gotten a sense for whether Leonard or Moore is more likely to be the guy come week one?
I really don't, and that's not a cop-out, because this program is at the level where they probably need both guys to play this year.
Hmm.
I think you'll have a starter, obviously. I don't think you'll have alternating, you know, possessions or alternating games, even for that matter. But I think you'll see both be part of game plans. And, of course, Riley Leonard is your classic drop back. Got the gun, pretty good quarterback that way in the pocket. He can run. It's not like he's a robot back there, but he can run. Jordan Moore has incredible speed, and we saw some last year. He gets in the open field, he can get away from people no matter what. I don't care if you're playing as Clemson or Florida, whatever. He's got some foot speed and some moves, and you know, they're working on him in the passing game. You might even see plays where both guys are on the field at the same time, right? You take advantage of the athleticism, maybe. Who knows? So, I just had a press conference with Elko a few hours before we taped this, and he made it clear, like, he doesn't have any idea. He really doesn't right now have an inkling. Again, only a few practices in, but there's still a lot of work to be done for somebody to take charge of that and say, I'm going to be the guy.
I was going to say, no offense to you, Steve, but it's hard for you to know if Elko doesn't know. So it's
That's right.
interesting you mentioned Jordan Moore. I mean, he was the team's second leading rusher last year behind Mateo Durant. So that's definitely a different dynamic to have there at the quarterback position. Skill-wise, you mentioned some of the receivers that are back. Jake Bobo is gone. Mateo Durant is gone. But it sounds like there are some guys there kind of waiting in the wings that have at least got some reps with live bullets flying that are going to step in and get a lot of those – carries and receptions this year?
Absolutely. And like I mentioned, Robertson is a junior and Darrell Harding is a senior. And those guys have been inconsistent. You know, Jalen Calhoun, for that matter, as well. He had a great freshman year in 2019. He had five touchdown catches or something like that. But he, especially early in his career, but he got away from finding the end zone. Now, part of it was, you know, Chase Bryce threw the ball to the other team too much, right, in 2020. Mm-hmm. And even Gunnar Holmberg last year had more interceptions than touchdown passes. So some of that's on the guys around him and the quarterbacks and all that. But Calhoun's a senior, and he needs to be a big play guy. He needs to be a breakaway guy, a guy that can make guys miss in open field and get those yards after catch. He's not been great at that. He's been a pretty good possession guy. Pretty good hands. You'll see him drop it a lot. Harding and Robertson and some other guys like that have had some drops. Haven't been good in 50-50 balls. Eli Pankel, another guy I want to mention, who's a senior. I know in practice a few days ago, you know, I saw him, you know, in a drill. It was a 50-50 ball, and he snagged it and pulled it away from the defender. And like there was a lot of celebration from the team on the sidelines. Like they hadn't seen much of that, right? And so – you talk about trying to build up competition. That's even where they're going to in practice. They're trying to get that done and kind of build it up that way. So, you look at other receiving cores at NC State or Wake Forest, stuff like that. Guys that a 50-50 ball for them is 80-20, right? At Duke, it's been 20-80. And so that's what some of these guys have to improve on a whole lot.
Let's take a quick break to remind you about Section103.com. It is the internet's premier place for buying all sorts of great officially licensed Georgia Tech apparel. They have got all sorts of great t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies. They've got stickers now. They've got something for the whole family. Men, women, children, everything. Go check them out. Once again, it's Section103.com. You're looking for shirts that are in the official Tech Gold. You're looking for shirts with the ATL logo on them. You're looking for other officially licensed things. Those things are hard to find in a lot of places for some reason. I don't know why. But you can find them all on section103.com. Again, go there, check them out. Use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order. And again, they have some stickers that have just come out. Those are really cool. Everything is really high quality that I've gotten from them. I've gotten some of the performance shirts. I've got one of the hoodies. Everything I've got there is great, and it really goes great on a Saturday afternoon supporting the Georgia Tech Yellow Jackets at Bobby Dodd Stadium or anywhere else. You're in the Thriller Dome. You're at McCamish Stadium. You're at the Rusty Sea. You are going to a volleyball game. You need something to support Georgia Tech, go to section103.com. They have great products. They are all officially licensed, got those official word marks, the official colors, everything. Everything you could ask for, you can go find it all there. Once again, use promo code GOACC for 10% off your first order when you do go. Appreciate Steven and the gang for their partnership with Basketball Conference. We look forward to another great football season partnering with them. And now let's get back to it. Defensively, I look at this. I mean, you've got three guys back, RJ Oben, Dwayne Carter, Shaka Hayward, who combined for something like 12 and a half sacks last year. That seems like a pretty good pass rush. Do you think that that's going to improve even further in a way that could help out that secondary that you mentioned really struggled last year at a lot of times?
Yeah, I think it will because of the brain power that is at Duke now on that side of the ball. Because Elko, right, that's his background, and Rob Smith. So you got two defensive coordinators, two experienced high-level defensive coordinators. That's not a knock on Matt Guerrieri and the staff that was here before. They just didn't have this kind of experience, right?
Right.
And it just didn't work. And so now you've got these guys that have done it at high levels and know how to get it done. So they're going to have some new ideas and new movements. But, yeah, that's one area. We talk about a lot of areas on the field where Duke doesn't have experience or talent. But defensive line is one where they've got a chance to be highly competitive there and really make a difference in some games. And so, yeah, you mentioned the guys that are coming back. And there's a new guy, a true freshman from Durham, VJ Anthony, who I think you're going to see him get a lot of playing time this year. He kind of looks like Chris Rumpf. Who played a couple of years ago is now in the NFL with Chargers, like a really athletic, off the edge, fast rusher. He's not huge, right? But he's quick and strong. And again, just a freshman. So there's a lot of growth there to be done. But he's already impressed a lot in spring ball because he came in early and then now in the fall. So that should be an area of strength for Duke.
And I guess just in general, have you gotten the indication that there are any like true freshmen on the roster that is going to be somebody whose name that we know by the end of this season?
Yeah, Anthony, I beat you to your question there. I'm sorry, but VJ Anthony definitely.
So he is a freshman then. Okay, all right.
He is a true freshman. Yes, he came in the spring.
Oh wow!
Early enrollee kind of guy from here from Durham, Jordan High School in Durham. So. That's always good to get somebody local doing some great things for Duke. That's one for sure. I think you'll see for sure. The other one, trying to think of some other, maybe Terry Moore, running back, from Washington, North Carolina, because, again, with Mateo Durant moving on to the NFL after his incredible career, setting the single season rushing record last year. There's carries available. And, you know, Jalen Coleman is a redshirt junior. Jordan Waters, they've played a lot behind Mateo, and they'll get a chance to do some things. But what they've done over the last few years doesn't really matter to Mike Delco and his staff. It's what happens now.
Right.
And, you know, if Terry Moore comes in and does some great things here in fall, he'll get the ball. So I think you'll see. I'll be surprised if you don't see him involved in some way or another. I'm not saying he's going to start, but he should get some reps because nobody at, again, it's early, but nobody at this point is like taking charge and said, I'm going to be the guy like Mateo Durant was last year and the year before.
Sure. Makes sense. Steve, looking at the schedule here, and the out-of-conference schedule has been something to watch, I think, at Duke. And they've done something smart here over the last several years, I think, of scheduling pretty reasonably. Like, not just scheduling what you would obviously just call, like, that's a loss. You know, so they've got two out-of-conference Power 5 games. Temple at Northwestern, North Carolina A&T at Kansas. Now, on one level, like, when you schedule those games, Northwestern and Kansas, like, those are games you can win, and they're Power 5 opponents. Now, this year, doing them both on the road with where, you know, the three programs are, might be kind of tough competitions maybe for Duke and, you know, I don't know, might be a tough year to be playing those games.
For sure. And, you know, think back to last year, two of the three wins Duke had were Northwestern and Kansas.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I remember last year talking to some people out in Lawrence on a radio show, and, you know, they were pointing to the Duke game like, that's one we can get, you know, and they didn't. So I'm sure this year they're looking at it that way too, right? They're both Duke's looking at Kansas and we can beat them again. And Kansas is like, we have to beat Duke this year. Can't lose them 2 years in a row. Mm-hmm. And Northwestern, you know, they go through cycles like they win the Big Ten West. And then the next year they'll kind of stumble. I mean, it's hard, you know, at this level of academia, it's hard to maintain, you know, greatness, you know, 7, 8, 9 wins every year. You're going to have a drop off. And so Duke obviously wants to catch Northwestern when they're on a dip like that, like last year. That's how they beat them last year. They weren't as good. So it's challenging. I mean, it's not, well, the two road games makes it a little more challenging than it normally would be, but they have scheduled that way. You know, they're trying to get to 6 wins. That's kind of what they've done when they put these schedules together. And, you know, you think back 2 or 3 years ago in 2019, the year that should have been, you know, Daniel Jones' senior year and not going to enter the NFL. And Duke opened with Alabama that year down in Atlanta, and they got beat soundly, which you'd expect.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went 5-7. And so that's one where that could have been a bowl season if you schedule whoever, right? Sure. Somebody besides Alabama.
Yeah, yeah.
You've got a chance to have a bowl game year. And so that was a different approach that year. They thought we're going to play a big – their bowl game basically was the first game of the year instead of the last game. That's all it was.
Yeah.
And so now since then they've kind of gone back and said, okay, maybe that was a little too much to bite off. Maybe we shouldn't have, because we missed out on a bowl trip because we played this game in Atlanta. So, yeah, now that they've got a chance with this schedule to get off to a decent start, maybe they can, you know, win. Like last year, they started off 3-1. They lost to Charlotte, but they started off 3-1. So that's kind of what you want to try to do, get after a start and then get into ACC play and try to find a couple of wins.
I was going to say, you look at this and say they scheduled two Power 5 opponents just like Georgia Tech did, except Northwestern and Kansas sounds a little different than Georgia and Ole Miss. Like, that's what my alma mater did. Yeah, it's going to be fun this fall.
Yeah.
looking at the rest of the schedule for Duke, I mean, so those are your first 4 games in September. Then you get into October, and it's Virginia at Georgia Tech, North Carolina at Miami, at Boston College, Virginia Tech, at Pittsburgh, Wake Forest. There's a bye right in the middle. There's no, like, there's only, I guess, one set of back-to-back road games. Like, I don't know how much you could really ask for. Again, it seems like a bit of a rebuild year here in Durham, but, sure. I mean, you get a couple of the easiest games you're going to play up front with Virginia and at Georgia Tech. And again, you get no back-to-back road games. Like, I feel like as much as you could have set this schedule up to be kind of fortuitous, it works out pretty well for Duke if there's going to be some wins to be gotten.
It does. I mean, you get the North Carolina game at home. So you're not going on the road and facing, you know, a bigger crowd over at Chapel Hill. There'll be a lot of Tar Heels at Wallace Wade Stadium, of course, but it won't be, you know, 60,000 or whatever you have over there. You know, you're right. There's no back-to-back road games that, you know, they play Miami on the road, then they have an open week, and then they play at BC.
Right.
So, yeah, you get that break in the middle. So that works out pretty well. So, yeah, I mean, they're not going to be favored in any of these probably. Sitting here right – I know today they're not. In any ACC game. Now, that may change, you know, as we get into game weeks and everything, depending upon what's happening. But you're right, Virginia and Georgia Tech both look like, Virginia's got a new coaching staff, and Georgia Tech is struggling. And this, you know, Collins has to do something this year. He's probably going to be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
And that was one of the teams that the one game that Duke was competitive in ACC play last year was Georgia Tech, and they lost to him. You know, one of the last plays late in that game, they gave up a touchdown, lost at home. So that's one that they're looking at. That okay, we can play with them. Maybe that's one we can steal down in Atlanta.
Right.
Come in there and get that. So yeah, it's not it's BC again is in the high level. You're not playing your crossover against Clemson.
Sure. Yeah.
So there is a chance there to try to do something. But again, this is a year where if they can get 4 or 5 wins, they'll have accomplished something. And
Oh yeah.
they've started moving things back in the right direction.
Yeah, and I was going to say, I mean, do you have an official record prediction? Are you allowed to give one?
Sure. I can, yeah, I can do it. I can say 2 and 10, and there's a good chance that'll be right. If you go by the odds makers, they were 3 and 9 last year. Again, we just looked at the schedule there. I can see them winning 3 or 4 or, but to me, it's more if you go 4 and 8 and you don't lose, 48-0 on the regular like last year, you've started to move in the right direction. It's okay. Moral victories aren't worth anything on paper, but when you're at this level where they are, they got to start getting back to competitiveness. And so if you start getting so the game's not over by halftime, which was the case a lot of times last year, then you're getting there. And so it's as it was explained to me last year when they were trying to decide what to do with Cutcliffe. If there was no number in mind as far as, oh, he has to be this many games for him to retain his job. How do those games go? And last year we know how they went, and that wasn't going to work. So yeah, Elko wants to get them back to a level of competitiveness. So if they're, you win 3 or 4, but you're in most of the games, that's a good start.
Sure. That makes sense. Yeah, and it's again, it's early in the tenure, and I think that this is a time where it's very easy to talk about not what does the 2022 Blue Devils team look like, but maybe what does the 2024 team look like. There's a little bit of a build here, and I don't really hold him all that accountable for, wins and losses this year. I think we'll see kind of what it looks like down the road here.
Yes, absolutely. It's just like, when Cutcliffe arrived in 2008, it took 5 years. They got to the bowl game in their 5th year. And that's, they don't want to wait that long again here. Obviously, you want to do it faster, throw it in the microwave, get it done quickly. But there's work to be done. And so, if he can, get to where they're running for a bowl game in year 3, 2024, like you said, that would work. That would get things going. And I think with the young talent they're bringing in, he's got 25 guys already committed for the class of 23. Like pretty much by the 4th of July, they had 25 guys committed already. And now it's a matter of holding it together, which is always tough. But he's got some momentum in recruiting and the future team. So you start looking at the roster and looking who's coming in and look, okay, by 2024, maybe we can have an 8-win season. That's what you want to build toward.
Yep, absolutely. Steve, this has been awesome. This has been really helpful. I really appreciate your time today. Do you want to really quickly tell the people where they can go find your stuff?
Absolutely, Joey. I'm the beat writer for the Raleigh News and Observer and Durham Herald Sun. We're all one organization now. So our website is newsobserver.com or heraldsun.com. Those are the two papers where you can find my stuff on Twitter. I'm at Steve Wiseman NC. So you can follow me there for Duke football and basketball. I do some basketball too. So
They do play
some
basketball in
stuff
Durham, it
there.
turns out.
They do a lot. And so it takes up a lot of my time. But yeah, no, this has been enjoyable, Joey. I appreciate you having me on.
Absolutely. Every time. Appreciate you taking the time. I appreciate it, Steve, so much. And we'll hope to talk to you again soon. All right.
Very good. Thank you so much.
Once again, that was Steve Wiseman with the Durham Herald Sun and the Raleigh News Observer covering the Duke football beat. Huge thanks to him. Once again, go give him a follow at Steve Wiseman NC, all one word on Twitter. I got to tell you, and I told Steve this after we hung up, this is a really tough program to find people that know things about it. They don't get a ton of press coverage. They don't get a ton of fan following. It doesn't seem like as much, certainly not near as much as the basketball team does. But Steve is a highly knowledgeable resource, and we're really appreciative that we found him a couple years ago and that he's been so generous with his time with Mike and myself over the years, coming on to talk about the Duke football team in a lot of depth. So shout out to him and much appreciation. My record prediction for Duke this year, I look at this schedule. I think that they can beat Temple. I think that they will beat North Carolina A&T. And I'm the kind of guy that I like to upgrade a team when I really like the coaching staff, and I do like a lot of the backgrounds of these guys. Not a lot of necessarily like household names on this coaching staff, but a lot of guys who have a lot of experience and can really bring a lot into the room and kind of help develop, I think, a young, inexperienced program. So I think that they can get one more win off the other 10 games. I don't know if it's Northwestern, Kansas, or one of the ACC games. You know, certainly Virginia and Georgia Tech a little bit ripe for the picking for the Blue Devils in particular. But I think this is probably like a 3-9 season for Duke. I don't think it's a complete and total cratering, although, I mean, as Steve alluded to, there are some serious roster issues in play here. You had some roster issues in play at the end of the Cutcliffe era that seemed like they really got worse with the departure of a few key players. You know, the few guys that were kind of holding it together seemed to be gone. You know, most notably Mateo Durant to the NFL and Jake Bobo, I believe, to UCLA, if I'm not mistaken. Still a few guys I do like. I mean, Jalen Calhoun has been a really good receiver for them for a couple of years, and so it's not completely and totally devoid of talent, but it does seem a little bit like a situation where you might just be like one or two injuries away from a totally different look and a totally hapless team on the field versus one that can kind of remain competitive. And as Steve alluded to, one that can kind of keep games close into the third and fourth quarter, even if you do come away with a loss. And so totally understand, and I'm completely on board with this whole thing of I don't judge Elko or this staff based on basically anything that happens this season in terms of the scoreboard or the win-loss column. You know, you might have some visual things that, you know, the eye test shows that the team improves from the start of the season to the end, but I'm really not holding them accountable for what the win-loss situation is. It is a quite a rebuild, I think, that they're going into from a roster standpoint. And so this is where I probably pretty much willing to ignore 23 as well before we start really passing any sort of judgments on what is, you know, what are they building and how is it going. I think we're a couple years away from there. This is a pretty hard restart. So I predict a 3-9 season for Duke. I think it'll be okay. Could easily see 2-10. I saw in my local shop Duke being listed as a 3.5 win total, except the under at -198. So they're basically telling you where everybody's betting this. And, you know, if you want to bet that they win four or more, you can get +141 on it. So that's a really good return on your money if you're going for it. I would not bet over 3.5. I would be really pretty surprised, honestly, if they win four or more games this year. But who knows? New coaching staff, new systems, you know, a lot of new things at play. And that's exciting to watch. And you never know. You can kind of get some strange results at times. And there's not a single one of those first four games. Again, Temple at Northwestern, North Carolina A&T at Kansas. Every one of those games is reasonably winnable. And even the Power 5 opponents, as Steve mentioned, I mean, Northwestern and Kansas, you got to go on the road. But those are teams that you beat last year. So there's reason to believe that there are wins out there to be had for the Blue Devils. But I personally wouldn't bet on it if it was, you know, if it's me and my own money. So I can't necessarily recommend that you bet that they win at least four games either. But I have been wrong once or twice about my betting picks on this podcast. And frankly, betting against me has long time for a long time has proven a profitable venture. So, you know, maybe consider betting against me if you catch my drift there. All right, that's all I have on Duke. I'm going to get out of here. We've got some more previews coming your way as we work our way towards the kickoff of the season. We do actually have a game, remember, the weekend before Labor Day. Florida State kicks off against Duquesne, or as I like to lovingly refer to them as my dad joke, is Duquesne. So we will keep previews going, but really with the target of that first weekend, that Thursday night where Pittsburgh hosts West Virginia. That will be the real target of the start of the season, as you might understand. But until then, we've got some more previews coming your way, so keep it tuned here. We really appreciate those who have, and especially if you're sharing us with your friends, we really appreciate that as well. You know, find the people in your life that are ACC football fans, for better or for worse, and let them know about the Basketball Conference Podcast. We really appreciate that, and help them hit the subscribe button and the follow button and everything that you can. It does a lot for us. It really helps us out. In the meantime, you can come find us on Twitter. I am at FTRS Joey. He is at Mike McDaniel SI. Together, we're at BC Podcast ACC. And once again, go follow Steve Wiseman at Steve Wiseman NC on Twitter, all one word. Go find him at the Durham Herald Sun and the Raleigh News Observer. Really appreciate his time one more time. You can come find us on iTunes, on Spotify, all those good places you go find podcasts. Once again, hit that follow and subscribe button. Give us a 5-star review. We appreciate those. If you leave a funny review, we will probably read it on the air. So that's always a good time. And the challenge is set to see who can leave the funniest review. So go do that. You will be entered in to be, I don't know, read on air first. That's probably the prize if you leave the funniest review. So go do that. We're on Facebook. We're on Instagram. We're on a lot of those social media sites, although, you know, who's to say how much we use them, but I swear it's us. So give us a follow, and maybe sometimes we'll start posting something again once both, you know, Mike and I are done with our dad duties for, you know, the next 3 years. I don't know. We'll see. Go follow us there. We appreciate that. That's all I got, though. So thank you guys so much for listening. For Mr. Steve Wiseman, I am Joey Weaver. Thank you guys so much for listening. We will talk to you again soon with some more team previews. Until then, I don't know. Go Blue Devils and go ACC.